20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Appreciate you joining. Appreciate even more the fact that Justice Mosqueda, J-U-M-O-S-Q, on social media, and of course, acmepackingcompany.com is joining us here today. Justice, my friend, it feels like after we were talking almost every day last week, it's almost been, what, like 5-6 days now? It feels like forever. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. It was, I've been running around all day today. Probably see sweat coming through my hat. It was 70 here.
Oh, shut up.
I don't know how you guys are holding up.
We've got like 20 plus inches of snow, and it's going to be like, it was below zero with the wind chill today. I was in blizzard conditions, just trying to clear a driveway. I had to clear it multiple times. No, I don't want to hear 70 degree weather.
Breaking a sweat going outside. So I'm saying, Wisconsin fans, if you're coming up to Portland to watch the Badgers play in the Moda Center, hit up Jerry's Bar. It's a Packers Bears bar, Midwest stuff. It's pretty good. I hang out there every once in a while.
Just for the record, too, for any of the listeners out there. So I posted a picture of all the snow that we got, and I said something like stupid state. I got all these guys, oh, he's so soft, he can't handle the snow. Okay, no. I don't mind any of the snow. I live in Wisconsin. I was born in Wisconsin. I've been here my entire life. I have no issue with it in January, in February, in December. When it hits March 16th, I don't feel like 26 inches of snow or whatever the heck it is that we got. So no, it has nothing to do with not being able to handle it. I was born in it. I just don't want it on March 16th. That's all. So everyone who's complaining about me complaining can go and shove it. I just want 70s right now. I don't want any of this crap in March. Even though we usually get some in March or April, I get it. I just don't like it.
Did you see the Packers couldn't get to one of the pro days today?
Oh, I did not see that. Who's could they not get to?
I don't even know why they're going down there, but Abilene Christian, they were going to fly out to Abilene Christian, and they couldn't because of the snow. And I'm like, good grief. That's not good.
Can you imagine? It was probably earlier April, but we've had serious April snowstorms, probably just like, I want to say like 8 years ago-ish, serious April snowstorms like this one. Can you imagine draft last year if we got something like this, like a week before the draft, or something?
Thank God we didn't have that. We had rain day one, right? Of the draft.
Just a little bit, like on and off, nothing crazy. I think maybe a little bit overcast and maybe a couple drips here and there on day two or whatever, but no, it wasn't bad at all. It worked out great. Could not have been better, all things considered, for Green Bay weather. But I digress. We don't need to go into too much of Wisconsin weather stuff. I actually want to start with something relatively simple. I don't think it's going to take us a ton of time to get into, but it was sort of the one piece of Packers news from Monday. That is the Zaire Franklin contract. And that not only did they trade for Zaire Franklin, but they gave him a little bit of a raise and they gave him signing bonus, which means A, he's on the team, and B, you know, he's going to be the starting linebacker, which was expected all the way along. Yeah. But Justice, the one thing for me that, like, you know, was at least a nice part of this of getting him in return of not having to sign him to a deal is like, well, you know what the contract is. You don't need to renegotiate. You don't have to give him a signing bonus. You don't have any guarantees. And now that's sort of undercut by the fact that they redid his contract and gave him guarantees. It's the exact opposite of the Rashawn Gary situation where Dallas got Rashawn Gary in. I don't know what the Gary camp and everything was thinking. They should have leverage in that standpoint. But Gary takes a pay cut, and here Zaire Franklin gets a pay raise. I'm a little bit confused by the overall situation, why they felt they needed to do it. But here we are. Enlighten me.
No, I mean, he got, what, a $2 million raise? This year from a cash flow perspective, and then got $3 million guaranteed. I wonder if he was like threatening to hold out or something like that. And they were like, look, let's be done with this. Let's see here. We don't have to deal with this, come training camp, come June.
Does this tell you there had to have been a legitimate Zaire Franklin trade market. Like, he wasn't just going to get cut in signing with a new team or something, because he sure pulled a lot of leverage for, again, the Colts able to pull a trade for a young defensive lineman in return, and Franklin able to negotiate a raise and a guaranteed portion of the deal for somebody who's coming off, again, arguably his worst year at age 30. Usually that's not the way that usually takes place.
Yeah. Again, I think like his film kind of needs a little bit of context too. Like he was put in a position where his strengths or his weaknesses weren't kind of like worked around. And that'll definitely be the case here. Like, we're really just looking for like a plugger mic. I think we looked at the market and we're like, give us the one that we, who is the cheapest from a commitment standpoint, not even from like a, we're spending this year's money. Obviously we just gave him a raise standpoint, but like, if we want to move off and go after someone in 27, give us that option. I think the Packers' entire off season has kind of been about like flexibility. Like the Ryan deal, it's got a big API, but that was pumped because he has super low guarantees. The St. Juice deal is like very weird. His cap hit's going to end up like doubling next year if he's not at least corner three, which I'm not sure that he's going to be on this team. He probably won't make it onto the 27 roster. Sky Moore obviously got a one-year deal. We brought all those special teams guys back. Like, no one that we've brought in is like going to be around for sure in 27. It's all like short-term stop gaps.
Which is the opposite of what Brian usually likes to do. And he's even talked about, they don't like the stop gaps. He talked about it this year. They usually like those longer term deals. So he's gone a little bit out of character so far this off season.
I just think they're protecting the picks. I mean, that's the biggest thing, I think. And then we got the short term cap space that we have now, which we can use on restructures, and whatever we don't use, we can roll over into next year. We probably, once you include things like Devontae Wyatt getting an extension and his cap number drop in, Xavier McKinney obviously going to get an extension based off of how that contract is kind of scheduled and stuff. Now we're going to be over like $80 million before even like the rollover. Right. So this is the be disciplined season. And then next year is the go spend it, push, push, push season.
Which probably works out. I haven't looked at what the next free agency class is set to be, but I know this one wasn't great. So hopefully in some way, shape, or form, that one is better than what this one turned out to be, because this one was pretty barren overall, especially with the contracts that got done right before the start of free agency that kept even guys like Alec Pierce, amongst others, in-house, Monteric Brown, right before the start of free agency.
Yeah, for sure.
Sean Ryan
We'll get into this when we talk about like Rashid and stuff, but like there's a lot of cap casualties that haven't been triggered yet. Like a lot of teams are just willing to sit on their guys right now, which is kind of interesting.
The Brandon Ayuk one is funny, if I'm being honest.
They're basically that's not even their only one. They have Trent too, right? Like they borrowed the Joey money or the Nick Bosa money to basically just sit on two guys. It's a weird situation around the league. I think teams are way more like comp pick pilled now than ever. And you're just seeing teams that are just like fully out of the market. They're like, no, we're not going to do it. And yeah, there's a lot of offsetting factors that come in with that too.
To your point, which you've talked about, and I think a couple episodes we talked about, but when you get in that situation, you either want to be like almost all in or all out. You either want to be,
schedule everything. You're linear. You have a plan. It's a multi-year plan. It's what Philly does, right? Everyone says they want to be Philadelphia. The Packers are starting to do it. People are throwing their hands up. There's other teams that are trying to do it too. I mean, Seattle was the crazy one to me. I mean, you're coming off of the Super Bowl. They have a ton of cap space, and they're just like, no, we're collecting comp picks. Like, we're not signing a CFA. They'll go after a guy like Emmanuel Wilson, who's an exclusionary free agent because he was an RFA and wasn't tendered. But they're like, got free agents who are like $2.5 million and over. Like, we're out. We're out. We're not doing it this year. And that's coming off the Super Bowl.
Denver AFC, like, should have probably been in the Super Bowl had it not been for Bo Nix's injury. They lose John Franklin Myers. They cut Dre Greenlaw. As far as I know, I don't think they've signed anybody, at least anything significant externally. They had
the linebacker Strand or whatever. I don't know if he's coming.
Strand or whatever. Yeah.
I can't remember. I think he was their only big deal. The Chargers right now, they're protecting that third rounder for OA. If they sign anyone over $2.5 million right now, the OA pick is gone. They're not doing it. Jacksonville's openly talked about how they're not participating in compensatory free agency. Their GM has said that into a microphone. Their GM did not even go to the combine. That's how committed to it they were. Baltimore's general manager has talked about how they don't want to be in free agency. They're protecting multiple mid-round picks. Like, there's just a lot of teams that are just like, no, pass. Yep. Like, and that's going to be the new reality. Like, teams are going to schedule when they're going to be good and when they're not going to be really pushing that hard. And it's going to be a get your house in order type of situation.
So with that in mind, with what Green Bay has done so far, getting Zaire Franklin via trade, getting Javon Hargrave off of a release, signing Benjamin St. Juice as their lone, their lone likely qualified unrestricted free agent.
Maybe. We're hoping we don't have the Moore deal yet. Yeah.
We're hoping that Sky Moore does not cancel out a 6th round draft pick. But what are your thoughts on what Green Bay's done in this early portion of free agency now that it's mostly picked over and there's not a ton left and they probably don't want to sign another unrestricted free agent?
Yeah. I do think that it's, well, here, let's talk about Green Bay first. I think the overarching thing is just like not huge commitments, which kind of makes sense when you're in the position that they're in. If they were going to burn one of these picks, it had to be kind of like a full go. I'd heard that they were interested in Woolen. Woolen obviously was interested in a 1-year contract. I'm not sure if a 1-year contract was really anything that the Packers were interested in. Yeah. Again, this is another, like, we'll talk about it when we kind of get to Walker and stuff, but like there were certain markets that actually regressed this year, even though that there was the $25 million cap increase. And it's because there aren't teams that are borrowing to spend. Like we've seen, you know, Philly, Cleveland, New Orleans, Miami, any of those teams. Right. And there's not teams replacing them. So it's not like where you are on your championship run timeline. It really is an ownership level thing. And I think that's something that people miscalculated. It's going to be interesting to see like the end of the year cash spend numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a lot closer to flat with the salary cap than the 10% over that we're used to year over year, just because like the chronic borrowers, right, can't really borrow anymore. You know, they've kind of lost that runway. Now that might change next year if we get the television deals done and we get a 50% bump as soon as the 2026 season starts. Sure. I know the NFL has talked about that with, what was it? The CBS is first, I think, in line, and then they're going to go to Fox after that. So, you know, that could potentially give these teams more runway, you know, and borrow more next season. But I just don't think that there was the money out there that teams thought. I think the Packers going comp pick wise was pretty smart. I think if they had to spend big money, it had to be at corner. And Woolen, I think he just wants a lot more than what his number is in Philadelphia. And he just took whatever the highest number was that he could get for a 1-year deal because he wants to hit the market again in 27. So with that out, I don't think anything like really made sense unless you want to make the case like, couldn't we have signed a nose tackle instead of St. Juste, right? I understand the arguments for that. If you wanted like a Lopez or Tonga or something like that. Yep. In place of St. Juste, or if you were like, well, if we would have gone after Biotish, who like isn't the best fit in this system, Ryan is definitely more of a people mover than Biotish is, even at, you know, their current points in their career, not to mention like the age splits and all that stuff. If you were like, we could have gone after Biotish, he was a street free agent that would have given us another swing, compensatory free agency. I could see that. But again, I think that conversation revolves kind of around nose tackle, because I don't know what kind of like mid-round free agent or like mid-level free agent you would have wanted this team to take a swing on. The offensive line is locked up. Nothing's really going to happen with the offensive skill positions. We just got another corner to add in, and I don't think you want to call all your shots on the roster spots at corner before the draft, because this is going to be a good draft for corners. I think you can take one in the second and or the third, right? I could see them double dipping early. Like maybe an edge rusher, but like outside of that, I think we're just talking nose tackle, right? For the most part.
Yeah, I think so too. And honestly, if you sign a nose tackle and don't have St. Juste, everyone's just talking about why don't you have a corner yet?
Corner. Yeah.
Yes.
So like it would have had to been like go after Biotish, don't sign Ryan, get the extra comp swing for Ryan, and then swing on, you know, you still do the St. Juste to cancel out the Enigbare pick, and then the Ryan pick ends up offsetting because of a signed nose tackle. But again,
are we sure Enigbare is going to be cheaper than Rashid?
We don't know that yet because we don't have full contract details.
So technically it could be canceling out the Rashid pick. It could be that of all the free agents, Rashid actually got less than anybody.
Crazy.
Absolutely crazy. I want to get there, but before we get there, I do know that you looked at some of the metrics for defensive tackles with Javon Hargrave. and just some of his pass rush ability and stop ability. And, you know, overall, compared to some of the other defensive tackles in the league, he compared well, even in a year where he felt he wasn't maybe utilized correctly, kind of reading between the lines there. And, you know, Minnesota, you know, it was obviously willing to get rid of him. Some of the metrics were still pretty darn good for Javon Hargrave.
Yeah, I mean, they used him as a nose tackle. They played a lot of 3-4 fronts. He's not a nose guard. He's not a head-up guy. Like, he could play nose tackle if you put him in a shade. He can move around on the line. If you want to have him be, like, your nose tackle and, like, nickel stuff, yeah, sure, great, go for it. Like, I don't doubt that it's going to be Hargrave and Wyatt out there when they're in their nickel sets, right? Yep. But I think if you're playing base 3-4 defense, you know, you have a guy head-up on the center – I think the 2-3 techs that you want are going to end up being Wyatt and Hargrave. And then you want someone else being kind of like the run clogger. Up the middle, Minnesota kind of leaned out of Hargrave at different points in those sets at nose tackle specifically. I'm like, I'm not shocked about that. Like, you shouldn't be playing this guy as a true nose guard.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, funky system. They thought they could kind of get away with it. I mean, they had. Really what they did is they signed 2-3 techniques last year, right? They got Hargrave and they got Jonathan Allen, and they were just kind of like, let's figure out how to play with them together. And then they had another guy who broke out and was a 3-technique. And we're like, okay, well, let's get these three on the field together. Who gets the short end of the stick? Hargrave, you're going to nose guard. And yeah, he kind of played out of position. Hargrave has, for the most part, been good his entire career. Even his first season in San Francisco, he had the injury. I think it was pec injury his second year in San Francisco, and then he ended up in Minnesota. But if you look at the Minnesota numbers, like the stop rates, the pressure rates and stuff like that, like still, you know, top quarter of the league, well-rounded defensive tackle. I mean, it's why it made a lot of sense for Green Bay to bring him in, right? Where even if everything goes to hell with the draft or whatever the plan is for the team moving forward, you know, they could sign free agents after the draft and stuff like that too. And those won't count against the comp situation. He could be a break glass in case of emergency type of nose guard if you really needed it, right? Now, hopefully they got a better plan than that, because I would like to see Wyatt and him play on the ends.
What is your plan currently, Justice, for nose tackle? Because we've talked about some of the draft possibilities, but you're kind of holding your breath if it's just like, well, we better get one in round 2 or 3 of the draft, or we're going to be, I mean, it's kind of DJ Reader, Daquan Jones, or draft at this point, unless maybe you trade for like a Harrison Phillips. Not sure if he can fully play that full time as a nose, but yeah.
I mean, dude, it's really interesting, man, because a lot of teams are holding on to a lot of players and a lot of teams are just completely out of the CFA market. So, like, I could see things kind of swinging this year where you start seeing a lot more post-draft moves in terms of player movement, either through trades or teams honestly, like, waiting out and not signing free agents until after the draft. I mean, we might because it kind of worked in a couple waves, right? So you have, like, the first wave of free agency is like the start of the tampering window, right? And then you have like the second wave, which is the cap casualties happen because teams have to be cap compliant on last Wednesday, right? For the start of the new league year. And then teams now are just like asking their guys like, hey, will you take less? Hey, will you take less? Hey, will you take less? If not, we're going to hold on to you. We don't want to pay you at your current rate, but we're going to hold on to you. I could see teams just getting fed up with that post-draft and being like, hey, man, we're building a football roster. We're not dealing with the script.
If I'm an agent and I have DJ Reader, or if I have Daquan Jones, or if I have one of the remaining free agents, I almost feel like it. I don't know. I guess it's a double-edged sword, because if a bunch of teams that are defensive tackle needy teams end up getting the defensive tackles they need in the draft, maybe you end up being screwed a little bit. But you open up a whole group of teams that aren't spending money right now that are willing to spend money post free agency. Yeah. And maybe you actually get into a little bit of a bidding war. It does almost feel like from all sides involved, you're kind of just better. Like, once that initial week of free agency is over, you almost just put a timeout on it and say, well, we'll see you after the draft, the day after the draft on Tuesday, I guess Tuesday after the draft, when comp picks no longer count and teams realize that, oh, we didn't get the nose tackle that we thought, or we didn't get the corner or quarterback or whatever, not quarter, but you know what I mean? Whatever position it is that they need. We'll be right back.
No, you're looking at it right now. There's more restructures happening in the NFL. You could look at the transaction wire than there are signings. Like,
yeah.
Teams are playing the game now. Right? We've had all these hypothetical nerd stuff that people have talked about before where they're like, man, you should really be valuing these comp picks a lot more. And teams are finally doing it. And now the market looks different.
Yep. So we've talked about it. We've nerded out on it. NFL teams now nerding out as well. You love to see it. Let's talk about Rashid Walker's brutal free agency. Not only did he not come through for the Packers during the season, he did not come through for the Packers in the postseason and ended up what we were hoping were going to be or was going to be a third round pick, now ends up being a sixth round pick. And that is a whole heck of a lot of difference and not in a good thing or in the favor of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. So I kind of know the story here, Andy.
Let's do it.
We can do this two ways.
Easy way or the hard way?
No, we can. I can give you a one-liner and have people wonder wonder why I think the way I think, or you can lend me a little credibility and I could send you some screenshots and we can get the real story out there. Which way do you want to do it?
You do whatever you need to do and I'll do whatever I need to do. Let's tell the story. So you want the screenshots on the screen when we post this, or what are you thinking?
No.
Okay. I trust you.
The first one will get in trouble. All right.
All right.
Just talking about free agency in general. We talked about money kind of not working the right way for some of these guys. There was pushback specifically at the positions with the least established markets at current prices. So the biggest gains last offseason were Dan Moore at tackle, right? Because he got $20.5 million per year after leading the NFL in sacks allowed. Significantly worse than what Rashid did last season.
Yep.
Off-ball linebacker were Jermaine Sherwood and Nick Bolton, which for Packers fans, let's best describe them, Quay Walker level linebackers. Okay.
Yep.
Got $15 million per year. And then outside cornerback, where every starting outside cornerback who hit the market got $18 million per year, even if they were average, even if they had a broken leg like Paulson Adebo, right? So what has happened since the pandemic is, what is the worst contract on the books? That is now the floor. And that has worked for agents since the pandemic. This year, things changed. I don't want to get into this too much because we kind of already talked about it. There's the teams that were chronic borrowers. They no longer can borrow, right? Cleveland, Miami, San Francisco, New Orleans, Philadelphia, their runway has kind of been exhausted. No one has replaced them. And then there are the teams that are completely out of the CFA market, right? Seattle, Jacksonville, Green Bay, Baltimore. And then there are teams that are squatting on cap casualties, and that is happening at a higher rate. A big example of this is Trent Williams, a player that we'll get into a little bit later. But all three of those factors contributed to basically, unless your name was Tyler Linderbaum, right? Prices from 2025 to 2026 actually stayed stagnant. Unless, you know, if they stay stagnant, they might have gone down. Yeah, they might have gone down. So I'm sure fans are like, well, you got the $25 million bonus on top of last year's cap. That's not really how it worked this year. And contracts are backloaded. Like, that money's kind of been scheduled out. And I think that in particular, that was a blind spot for agents who represented players at these positions. And Andy, it's a reason why we talked about this on day one, on your day one stream. And we're like, so Rashid hasn't signed. He's really the only like big, and the Packers fans are going to argue. I understand about whether Rashid was the top tackle on the market type stuff. We'll get into some evidence a little bit later. But he was still out on the market. The top corners for the most, like Woolen signed a little bit late on day one, if I remember, but like Watson. Woolen signed on later on.
Like day three and, or something.
Yeah. And then the linebackers didn't sign on day one either. So they were kind of guys who like waited out on the market a little bit. That's kind of your first sign that, you know, they were getting numbers that they didn't want to hear. Want to hit on one more thing before we get into what I'll call the screenshot game, Andy. The offensive line market, there was another weird quirk this year where there wasn't a ton of demand for left tackles, actually. Like, relative to a normal season, it was like Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City, who were looking at like multi-year guys. You had Chicago and Carolina, who were looking at short-term starters, because their current left tackles, who they like, suffered a late season injury last year that might not have those guys play at all in 2026. Okay.
Yep.
And then the X factor was San Francisco and whatever the hell happens with Trent. Okay. I want you to look at the, we're going to call this Exhibit A, the first screenshot that I sent you. I hope they're in order. I'm going to ask you a couple yes or no questions here, Andy.
Okay. I'm just reading this now. Give me 1 second.
Go for it. Go for it. Take your time.
Just reading through. Sorry for everyone at home that I'm just reading this now. Give me 1 second.
I cropped this guy's name, by the way. If he hears this, first of all, he should have been smart enough to not talk about a Packers fan or a Packers player with me. If you didn't want it out there, but I covered your butt. Andy doesn't know what your name is. You're not going to
get it. I do not. All right, I'm good. You can ask me questions. I skimmed it quickly. I think I'm good to go.
All right, first question. Do you think this guy works for a team?
I'm going to say yes, but I don't know for sure. I read it very quick.
I got rid of the name. Okay. This guy works for a team.
Okay.
Based off of the names in there, do you know what team it was?
That's an interesting question.
Here, I'm going to type
that in. I do not feel as confident in.
Gonna help you.
That's okay. I swear to God, that's the team that I was gonna say. I swear on everything, that's the team I was gonna say.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to say it out loud.
I thought you could have gone there with context clues. Maybe I can.
The first one. I thought for the very first screenshot, I thought that's what it was on the very first one that you sent me on the top, and I'm like, that makes so much sense that it would be that team. I don't know if you want me to say it, but yes, that was. I swear to you on everything, that was gonna be my guess. Okay.
I'd like you to not say the team, but was the team in the left tackle market?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So we have that established. Can you read just the line where it says Walker and it gives the number?
If we made Walker a priority, he would have been 17.
It's interesting.
Yes.
And then the line above it, he's talking about another one of these players, a position that got pushed back on, right? And he also says that they would have given him, what, $3 million more than he ended up getting on the open market, Andy?
Yep, correct.
Okay. And the other, he also used the word prioritize in that line too. All right.
Yes.
So this is the story, Andy. There was a team that was willing to give him $17 million per year. And he signed for 10. So we're going to solve what happened. But first, I want to tackle prioritize. Okay. I don't know what people imagine free agency to be. I think they think in their heads it's like a Madden screen, right? Or like some league-wide auction block where like numbers are updated or something like that. That's not how it works, especially early on in free agency when stuff is flying very quickly. You have the pre-combine meetings, right? Then you meet and collude at the combine with agents, and then you come back and you have the post-combine meetings and you build your plan of attack for a free agency. What it looks like isn't, you know, a Madden menu. It's a guy picking up the phone, right, and saying, let's, random free agent, Alante Taylor, right? Alante Taylor wants 20. His agent calls you, says, hey, Alante wants 20. Would you be willing to sign him to 20? You say yes. And then it's a done deal and he's off, right? Someone either on the team side, most likely the agent side, goes and tattles to Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter says, wow, this is the greatest deal of all time, right? And that gets the word out to the rest of the league. What they mean by prioritize there is they came in with too high of a number. So Walker's camp wouldn't have taken 17. They wanted a higher number than 17. So early on, when guys are flying off the board and, you know, money comes off of cap tables, right? He just ends up sitting out there. Okay. That is part one. Okay. But this doesn't explain why we go from 17 million to 10 million, Andy. Something else must have happened also. So that is where we get to screenshot number two. This is an agent who represents a, I'm not going to give too many identifiers here, day one, day two tackle in the upcoming draft. His entire job right now is to pay attention to the tackle market. He's not an agent who's a lawyer and does agency stuff for fun. This is a real big boy agent. Andy, one of the weird quirks about the NFL, I think this was true at one point. I don't know if it's still true today. There are more certified NFLPA agents than there are roster spots in the NFL. Jeez. Like a lot of these guys who are like UDFAs making it into the league and stuff like that, like their agents are doing it for the love of the game and are probably losing money. It's not great. Based off of, I want you to read. So for context, these texts were sent, except for the last two, these texts were sent on the day of the new league year, but before the new league year started. So this is Wednesday before like noon. Okay.
Okay.
I would like you to read the first three lines on this.
What's Rashid going to sign for? Please tell me more than more or higher. Higher That's than me. More, but the long.
I was saying that was my text to them. And then this is.
The oh, yes, yes, yes. Yep. Okay. So then there was, but longer this goes, more likely it's a 2-year deal rather than a 4-year deal.
So this is an agent who represents big draft pick who still thinks that on the day of the new league year, Moore is going to sign for more than the Dan Moore number. This is a part that is not included in this screenshot because it was a phone call. I don't know how to screenshot phone calls yet, Andy. When I get that, I'll loop you in.
I think that might be illegal, at least to record the phone call.
So the agent's theory, right? And this was probably Rashid's representations theory too, was the two people who represent Rashid Walker are also the two people who represent Trent Williams. So from their perspective, even though we talked about how the demand for left tackles is pretty low because there's not that many teams that are really in the need for one of them, right? They have all the supply. And agents thought that that was a point of leverage. Agents at this point in time thought that their camp was still negotiating from a strong point of leverage. Like they weren't going into the market asking for new prices, stuff like that. But then something obviously changed, Andy, right? And here is where we get into the speculative part, because this is the conversation that I had with this agent specifically. Okay. What could have changed? The way they were acting, they must have thought that they had some sort of card that they could have pulled from like the back of their pants, right? Whether it was Trent Williams is going to get moved and that creates demand in San Francisco. And now San Francisco is like, oh, we're in the tackle market. Things get more aggressive. Bidding starts up. Okay.
Yep.
Or it was they had a backstop deal that they continued to turn down that ended up falling through. Right? What they thought was the floor ended up falling through on them. If there was a team that backstop was, it was probably Cleveland based off of their spending patterns. Cleveland had to turn over their entire offensive line this offseason. Every single one of their starters was a free agent. One of the big surprises on day one of free agency was the Zion Johnson contract where he got $17.5 million. Seemingly out of nowhere, there were a lot of top 100 lists where Zion Johnson was not ranked as one of the top free agents. That is kind of like the Aaron Banks deal of this class, if you want to think about it that way. And then we cut Elgton Jenkins early before the start of the new league year, and he ended up signing in Cleveland. And maybe the money just vanished like that, right? Because the Zion Johnson deal didn't necessarily take them out of the left tackle market, right? Yep. But then the Elgton Jenkins money could have taken them out of the can't spend any more on our offensive line market. We're just going to draft the left tackle in the first round, which is probably what Cleveland's going to end up doing now. So the facts I bring up to you are a team was willing to pay 17, but they didn't pay 17 because Rashid's camp came in with higher numbers. Okay.
Yep.
And then two, Rashid's camp wasn't readjusting prices based off of what this agent who's in the tackle market. This is what his job is right now. His baby is, I need to get this tackle that I have drafted as high as possible in this upcoming class. And it's a pretty highly rated tackle. That pricing wasn't changing even at the start of the new league year. I want you to read the final text that he sent me on Friday within an hour of Rashid signing the contract with Carolina.
Clearly overplayed his hand in the end.
Yep.
I would say so. Where we're at.
So here's how we're going to be able to fact check this, Andy, and see if I'm full of crap or not, or if I made up these screenshots like a psychopath or something like that. I just don't want to get called out again. I think Rashid's going to sign for 17 plus next year.
He could.
I think that's what's going to happen. As long as, you know, let's throw in a couple caveats here. Major injury. Okay. That's an obvious one that would change his price. You know, as long as he's like a average pass protector, bad run blocker, which is kind of what he's been his entire career, teams were willing to pay $17 million for that this past year. And I think they're going to be willing to do it again next year. We could talk about like the 1 year deal and all that stuff. Like, it doesn't make sense for him financially. If you stack it this way, which is probably how they're going to end up thinking, him and his representation thinking is, hey, we gambled hard in 2026. We ended up losing, right? We'll take the $10 million. But if we can get 17 and 17 over the next 2 years, well, that's $44 million over 3 years. So we shouldn't take less than a $15 million per year multi-year contract based off of those numbers. It's actually better for us to take the 10, hit the market again, and not gamble next season. I think there probably would have been more money out there than this is, again, this is speculative. There probably would have been more money out there for Rashid if he was willing to take a multi-year contract. But I think they saw the money that they turned down and were probably like, yeah, we got to hit the market as soon as we can. So we're really only looking for whatever the max deal on a one-year contract is. We talked about that there were two teams that were really in the short-term left tackle market. It was Chicago who ended up bringing one of their guys back in Braxton Jones, I want to say. And then the other was Carolina. So like Carolina is a really good fit for him in terms of his fallback as a gamble, want to hit back the market again. Carolina gets the benefit of just having a one-year left tackle starter. Ike Ekwonu is going to come back in 2027, probably hopefully for them. I think Carolina is going to get a higher comp pick for Rashid than we got because he gambled on our dime and he's probably not going to gamble two off seasons in a row.
17 mil would have been a fourth round pick instead of a sixth round pick. So that would have been off.
Yeah. It would have been similar APY to Romeo. I guess that there would have been offers on the table for like a fifth round comp pick coming back to Green Bay on a multi-year deal option that Walker had out there. But again, it made more sense for Walker to take less money to have it be a one-year contract so that he could get back to the market and actually get that $17 million deal, right?
Sure.
But that's where we're at. Again, Andy read it. Confirmed. There was an NFL team willing to pay $17 million for this guy. And they turned it down and waited too long.
I put it through Grok and it said the image was AI generated. So, a 1,000,000,000% believe you. And based on everything that's in there, very, very clear to see. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Let me ask you this, just now that this is done, Green Bay likely to get a sixth round comp pick in return.
Yeah.
Do you think that this changes the calculus for Green Bay at all? Whereas before, all right, fifth round pick, we don't want to sign somebody. We don't want to sign a DJ Reader, but now that it's only a sixth round pick, we'd lose. Maybe we're willing to sign a DJ Reader.
I think it could make sense at nose tackle. That's the only position I think it makes sense. I think if you would have told Green Bay at the start of free agency, hey, you're only going to get a sixth round pick for Rashid Walker, they probably would have been more aggressive at the start of free agency.
Yeah.
At the same time, if we're all getting redos, If Rashid's camp knows that he's going to ultimately sign a 1 year, $10 million contract, he's probably just going to sign for the 17 instead of hold out there and ask for, I don't know, at least north of Dan Moore, right? 20 and a half. So yeah, I mean, if everyone gets redos, I think this looks different and we probably just end up collecting the fourth round pick. If the Packers know ahead of time that he's only going to get him a six, I think they're maybe more aggressive in like the corner market. probably. Maybe you don't sign a St. Juice. Maybe you sign a better corner than that, and then you also offset by the, signing a nose tackle.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of ifs. I just wanted to get that story out there. Like, I know people want to point and say, like, well, Walker wasn't that good, and that's why he didn't get paid. And it's like some weird retribution thing, right? But I think you're going to see it next year. I think he's going to get the $17 million per, either through an extension in Carolina or by hitting the free agency market. And if he hits the free agency market, Carolina's going to get a higher comp pick than we did. Like, they gambled and we lost. As you know, we caught astray in this in this gambling.
Would there be anything that would have wanted you to keep Rashid Walker at 1 year, $10 million, if you were Green Bay?
So I've seen this question a lot. You have to answer me. The starting point on this is he, would he have started?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And like, I don't get called a conspiracy theorist here, because Schneidman talked about this with Nagler. But like, one of his theories was that, like, are you playing these guys who are outgoing comp picks more so that you don't hurt their market when they hit free agency? Because when we talk about, hey, Morgan looks really good, he looks better than Rashid, right? The only offset is if you bench Rashid, that hurts him in the free agency market. When we talk about Matthew Golden, he's looking really good. We, you know, he's performing well. We got to bench, like, get him involved more. You're not sitting Christian. He's not going to play in the slot for Jaden. So you would have had to sit Romeo. And again, he's an outgoing compensatory pick. Are you willing to, like, undercut those guys in contract years when you know you're going to get picks for him? I think that's a real question here.
You know what they probably would have got for Rashid if they benched him? 1 year, $10 million.
Yeah, I get. I mean, I don't think Walker saw this coming. I mean, that
no.
Brian might answer that question if you ask him. Like, hey, you only got a six for Rashid. Did you think that that was going to be the case going in? I think he might answer it.
We will only get Brian. Well, we'll get him in camp, but we'll get him at the league meetings, the draft too. After the draft too, league meetings will be the next one. I will not be there, so I will not be able to ask that. But maybe somebody will. But yeah, I will say this: going in, best case scenario was 2/3 for Malik and Rashid, probably 2/4 for Quay and Romeo. That would have been like gangbusters. Oh my god, this is incredible, sort of stuff.
And I think we mostly got there. Like, Quay got right under it. He's not going to be pushing the fourth now, but like, he's very firm. Fifth, like, pretty much whatever happens, he's going to be a fifth. I think it's the big L is just Rashid. Like, that was just the one that everyone got wrong because he stayed on the market for so long. They thought they had leverage, and then ultimately they didn't have leverage. San Francisco didn't have to move off of Trent, and there was no more need created. You know, Cleveland did get out of the market because they spent the money elsewhere on the offensive line.
I will put it this way, though. So it was 2/3 and 2/4 was the best possible outcome. They ended up with a third, likely, for Malik.
Yeah.
They likely ended up, well, not likely, they ended up with 2/4 for Romeo and Rashawn Gary. Not something we expected going into the offseason.
Yeah, so true.
They lost a third in this equation of best case scenario. And instead of that third, they picked up a fifth and a sixth. So you wouldn't trade a third down for a fifth and a sixth, don't get me wrong. But like, in the scheme of things of what we were expecting, we weren't really expecting anything for Rashawn. And we were hoping for 2/3 and 2/4. We still got 2/4, likely a third. We lost a third, but we picked up a fifth and a sixth in return. Not the ultimate worst case scenario at the end of the day.
No, I think their plan mostly worked out. I mean, the Packers couldn't have done anything about what happened to Rashid.
Yeah.
Like, if they were going to gamble on the market, they gambled on the market. And then ultimately they kind of, it was a game of musical chairs, right? And they didn't have any seat. And they were like, oh crap, we just got to take the 1 year deal.
I know we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but just transitioning a little bit, is there anything else that you would do right now ahead of the draft, before that second, or I guess next wave of free agency after the draft? Is there any free agent? Would you be in on the Josh Sweat sort of trade situation? Anything that you would actually be interested in for the Packers at this point in time? We'll be right back.
I don't know, man. I've heard that they're like poking around on some of these like early round 2 edge rushers and stuff. So I can see them just like wanting, because you can't add Josh Sweat and then draft a guy.
Like, no.
Not even just from like a ammo standpoint, like from a roster construction standpoint. Like,
yeah, it's too much. Yeah,
kinda,
too
much in one area. Yeah. Like, what the hell are you? Yeah. So I don't know. I kind of doubt it. I do think that they like LVN. LVN played better at the end of the season than he's ever played in his Packers career. I think he's trending up. I think like one of the, and this is going to piss Packers fans off because they're like, we're drafting these guys and we're developing them for multiple years. And then the Packers front office will point back at you and say, that's the point. That's the point. But like, there's draft picks in this class that are younger than Lucas Van Ness. He's very young.
Yeah.
He's 24 years old. Like he's, I think Akeem Mezador is like a couple months older than him. And he might be a first round pick edge rusher.
July 6, 2001 is LVN's birthday. Who did you say?
Akeem Mezador.
He is April 5th, 2021. So yeah. Actually,
a couple months.
Older, right? Because yeah, he's older.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's actually older by a few months. Because yeah,
he's going to be a first round pick. So like, I know people are like
25 here in less than a month before the draft. He'll be 25 before the draft. LVN will be 25 after the draft.
Yeah. I know Packers fans are like, you know, produce earlier, we're done with you. And the Packers don't think like that at all. They're like, take your time. We've seen like Matt talk about defensive linemen too. And he's like, yeah, you can't even like count on them until like year three, basically. Yeah. And I'm sure that's going to drive fans nuts. But that's how they think. They're like, we'll deal with the growing pains. I don't think that they're out of the LVN market, whether it's the fifth-year option or extension at all. Yeah. Plus, if the numbers – hey, man, if the cap numbers are going to be going up 50% in the next year, extend everyone. It'll all be good contracts.
That's a good point.
If the cap is going to jump 50%, what are we doing? Lock everyone down on a 100-year contract. It doesn't matter.
LVN, yeah. LVN pick up the fifth year at least. Devontae is the most interesting one to me just because of his age. But I think with how hard it is to get defensive tackles, I bet they figure out a contract extension for him. And then Kraft and Watson will be the easy ones.
Watson's
not like, easy.
Yeah, well, Watson I think is super easy.
Because just
we Pierce. Have the contract now. We have the Pierce contract, and the Pierce contract was basically the Jameson Williams contract plus a little bit. Like, that was his market. Those are his best two comps. They're speed receivers, similar production. Jameson even came off the ACL, right? So people can't throw the injury thing at Christian Watson. Like, no, you can have a major injury, still get paid in the NFL, guys. So, yeah, I think Christian's going to get, like, $29 million a year.
We saw Justin Fields get traded to KC on Monday. Is there a backup quarterback leader in your clubhouse right now for Green Bay?
I don't think that they're going to – I don't think they're going to offset a comp pick for it.
No, I don't think so either.
But like, I think that's like a post-draft thing. I could totally see him post-draft being like, you know, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, whoever the hell else is out there still at that point. Like, I could see him going that route post-draft. I think it's weird, man. I think free agency is way more stratified now than we thought. And it's because the nerds are gaming the market.
Yeah, it makes sense. The other thing too is, you know, when they traded for Malik Willis, they took, you know, what was it? Sean Clifford and who was the Michael Pratt? They took that all the way till the end of training camp. And then they are like, nope, we can't do that. We'll trade for somebody because nobody stepped up. They could give Ridder and who's the other guy who always draw blank? What's that?
McCord.
Yeah, McCord, Kyle McCord. They could give those guys until the end of training camp and say, and like an undrafted free agent, give those three guys till the end of camp and be like, does anyone step up? Nope. All right. We'll do something at the end of camp and trade for somebody or sign somebody. Could easily still do that too.
Especially if you're going the vet route, right? I mean, how many teams run this system league-wide? Yeah. You can have a guy come in.
Big time.
The other thing about Malik too, and because I've seen it with like that, I've seen people float the Anthony Richardson thing. There's the Will Levis stuff, which I don't think his contract told at this point, so that means he is still on a one-year deal. Malik had 2 years under his contract. It's a way bigger difference if it's a one-year guy than a two-year guy. I know people have been like, well, what if Anthony Richardson gets the Malik deal next year? I'm like, it took 2 years for Malik in a backup role to come in and build his reputation up to that point. Yeah. Unless you think, unless you're planning for Jordan to get hurt in October and be out for the rest of the season, I don't envision a way where Richardson could do that.
We're not even so talking like, about that.
I could see him doing it, but like it would be, I think it would have to be a pick swap at that point, where it's like, yeah, here, I'll give you a six, you give me a seventh. Like the number, yep, would have to be that low.
I think.
And then so if too. You're Indianapolis at that point, he's making $5 million per year. That's what the price is for like a, you know, backups in the NFL at this point. Why don't you just keep him if all you're going to get is a move up in late day three? I don't know.
Does Indy have a Daniel Jones plan right now when he's not playing at the beginning of the year? Because that seems like something that would be probably important to get in order for
Riley Leonard. Yeah, it's Riley Leonard, Seth Hennigan, and Anthony Richardson right now.
Yeah, that seems like something.
I mean, what their plan is, hey, buddy, we're handing the ball off to Jonathan Taylor. It's probably what their answer is. The Daniel Jones contract is so crazy.
Anthony Richardson can do that just as well as anybody, though. all right, a couple things.
I still don't get why. I just want this out there. I don't get why Indianapolis didn't wait and was in the Kyler conversation.
I talked about this.
You could have had him for free.
Yeah.
Unless and then you gave it like a 2-year commitment to Daniel Jones, but he's only going to be healthy for half of it. Like you end up paying more per game for Daniel Jones than any other player in the league right now, yep, on their current contract.
Yep. I don't get it.
And you could have had Kyler for free. Like, I'm like, what am I missing here? I don't get it.
I did a best and worst moves of the offseason and most interesting moves of the offseason. And my number one that I went for on worst was the Daniel Jones contract. I don't understand it. Like if you got me to the point where it was a healthy Daniel Jones and they saw proof of concept and Indy's just like, we're stopping this musical chairs at quarterback. We're going with somebody. We're picking them. This is going to be our guy. Like maybe
I guess the coach and GM are on the hot seat and this guy's going to be hurt coming into the year.
Half the year.
And you only got him on a 2-year contract.
Exact same thing I said. That makes no sense all the way around. I was stunned, absolutely stunned by that. I don't know why you paint yourself into that corner when you have other options out there. It makes no sense to me. And again, you are in a must win season and Jones might miss half the year in a must win year. In fact, if there was ever a time to be like, we have to pivot and we have to go with Kyler or somebody else, because if we don't win now, we are completely screwed. It's this year. And then for the ownership to be like, if this doesn't work, we're probably going to fire the front office and the coach, but we're going to allow you to sign Daniel Jones to a massive 2-year deal so that the next coach and GM have to inherit this. I don't know. It's so
at least
stupid.
It's short.
I guess
that perspective, at least it's a short deal, but yeah, I mean, I think they're going to get canned this year. I think Tennessee's on the road of all those guys getting canned already off of the contracts that they just signed. It won't happen this year, but it might happen after 27, at least 28.
Brandon McManus going to be the Packers kicker, got his $1 million bonus. I can't imagine they're going to do too much aggressive now to replace him. They'll give him some token competition in camp, but unless he chokes, I would assume he's going to be the Packers kicker this year.
Yeah. I kind of thought that was what was going to happen, right? Where you're like, oh, we're going to have competition. There's always competition. It's going to be Haversick. And then McManus is going to beat him in camp. He was also reelected as a vice president of NFLPA, by the way. Him and Zaire Franklin.
I knew Franklin got it. Who was the other? McManus got it?
McManus. I think this is his like second term. He was gotcha. Already vice president. And then Orrin Burks, another former Packers on there. Vandy guy. Obviously, Vandy guy.
Okay. Do you want to talk about Ed Policy?
Sure. Yeah. I thought about bringing the bottle of Moscato up, but like this is kind of a serious thing. So I feel like we should try to at least treat this like an adult right now.
All right, let's try our best.
All you had to do was count, and you could realize like all of the money that the Packers have saved over 100 plus years of being a franchise. And then you start doing the money on the valuations of teams and what they're getting. You know, cash injections from just selling to like private, not all the private, like Miami got the $12.8, I think, billion-dollar valuation. And they sold it to like a Chinese businessman, right? It doesn't all have to be private equity.
Yep.
But they're getting cash injections left and right that dwarf what the Packers have been able to save for 100 years. And they're getting it all at once. So, yeah, I mean, I read the article. I believe most of what Policy said. I again would have pushback on that. It hasn't impacted the coaching market. The Packers have a reputation. I don't know what to tell you. Like, that is a true thing. I don't think that they've helped or hurt themselves this year. Like, they're probably cheaper at special teams coordinator, but I think that's just because Rich left, right?
Yep. Yep.
I don't think money was a factor in hiring Gannon, but it probably is worth noting that Gannon is working off of a buyout in Arizona. Usually you have a duty to mitigate clause in those contracts. So, like, Gannon can't sign for $1 and have the Cardinals pay him the rest of his money. You usually have to have like a, it's an exact number, Andy, but it's basically a, this won't get me sued number, where it's like, this is the price for a defensive coordinator. But I don't think they're paying top market for Gannon because of the buyout. The Virginia Tech guy that we brought in for linebacker coach, he's getting bought out as the defensive coordinator, right? For that team. We spent money, probably spent money for the buyout on the receivers coach. But in that article, they even mentioned like the biggest worries for these teams in like the uncapped markets, right? It's coaching and then it's coaching buyouts. And that's the part that no one is willing to go and attack here. We're like, all these guys that left Green Bay, we didn't fire anyone.
Nope.
They left on their own volition. So like, Matt could have blocked most of them, not all of them, but most of them leaving.
Yep.
He didn't think enough of them to not block them. But the team also didn't think it was urgent enough to make changes that they actually, literally anyone, I don't think they fired anyone. As far as we know, there's not a single buyout that they executed, right?
No.
So, and then you have the Pettine stuff, you have
the Rizzy
stuff. In the past, like, I think the perception is still kind of the perception there. Plus, we have the head coach situation with LaFleur, where it clearly wasn't about, at least on the Packers' end, it wasn't about performance at all. It was all about money. Yeah. So I still think that impacts them there. But, like, the things that he was saying where he was like, yeah, the prices of things, like, they can't really go up. It doesn't make sense for them to go up. Like, we just have to scale and have more events. It's the exact same stuff I've been saying for like the last, I guess since Rizzi, or since Policy took the job, right? And he had that comment about my number one goal was to stay in Green Bay, and fans kind of overreacted to it. And I was like, no, you should probably, that should be the goal.
Yep.
There's a reason why there's not a bunch of Green Bay. There's a reason why this place is special, right? I do think that when he was like, yeah, one football game, one other event, and one concert, and I'm like, I don't know if that's going to cut it. That's a great short-term goal, Ed. I don't know if you should limit it to three events. Like, Miami is going to get money from the World Cup. Miami is getting money from F1, which is huge money. F1, huge money. Yep. Miami is getting money from not only the Dolphins playing in that stadium on Sundays, but also the Hurricanes on Saturdays. They're getting more soccer friendlies, right, than just one per year. Yep. And they're also getting concerts too. So like, those are like, Miami is the biggest example to point to because it's both rich owner willing to spend, maximizes the stadium, right? And it's going to be the second oldest outdoor NFL stadium other than Green Bay once the Bears move, and I guess Kansas City moves too. But yeah, I mean, this is why a lot of teams are moving right now and building domes. It's why Chicago is doing it. It's not just the stadium. It's the stadium and all the stuff around it. And it's why Kansas City is doing it too. And they want the domes because they want to hold it more events than just in sunny weather times if you're, you know, kind of up north. Because Miami's able to do it year-round. So they got to figure something out. He's right that they have to scale. Andy, the one thing I don't understand – why the hell did he say this? The timing? Like,
yeah.
Like, we haven't heard any. Like, we've had a DC hired for 2 months that we haven't heard a peep from. Ed Policy, we've heard him. So it was the shareholders meeting. We didn't hear from him outside of his, like, monthly blog post thing on Packers.com, right?
Yep.
Other than his statement when they re-signed Gute and LaFleur, which they didn't have a presser for it, right? And then his statement when Harlan died. Like, he hasn't shown face since the shareholders meetings, and now he's popping out and he's like, actually, guess what? It's really hard to win in Green Bay, guys. And I'm like, you have a PR team. Like, why it did this come out like the Sunday before a massive snowstorm?
Like, the timing was like, definitely odd.
Memorial like this week.
Yeah. Now it's next week, but yeah.
Like, what is going on? I don't understand that. So my thought on this, right? Kind of two things, like, and there's always backlash when you up ticket prices. They didn't do it egregious enough that I saw any sort of like real movement starting, Andy, about a backlash about the ticket prices going up.
I haven't heard a peep.
I've seen a little bit of it, but it's mostly just snide comments, right? I don't think that there's this movement building, right?
Right.
And I would think that like putting something out like this would maybe tamp that down a little bit. But again, I don't think that movement is building. Or is it that they're like, they're ready to go to war for like the stadium stuff with like Brown County?
That's the other thing, is that they've still got the issue going on with the city of Green Bay,
right,
too.
Where they're like, let's lube the push that is about to come. Because it's either to stop something or to lube something, right? So like, why'd you do this? I don't think Ed Pulsey just was like, man, I really need to be in Sports Business Journal, which like is a good publication. There's a lot of good information that comes out of that. There are a lot of the people who end up covering the stuff that we talk about with like the broadcasting deals and things. But like, I don't think he just wanted to like get his name out in the Sports Business Journal. Like,
it is interesting timing. It is interesting timing.
Because as far as we know, right, the pieces of paper that we bought for like $250 or whatever, that was supposed to go to Lambeau Field renovations. I've seen a lot of comments about stuff. First of all, people didn't read the article, right? The people were like, they're going to change the name of Lambeau Field. I'm like, they explicitly said that's exactly not what we're going to do. But we bought these pieces of paper. It's supposed to build up it has to be used on facilities, right? Before the draft, we had the issues with Lambeau Field and the county over the lease that is coming up at Lambeau Field, right?
Yep.
And the Packers were like, oh, we're prepared to do all this stuff. I think they were going to build up like the concessions and things because they already did the video boards, right? So the money was spent on the
it's
video
like the board. Concourse area.
Yeah, they were going to do the concourses, but then they put that on pause before the draft because of their stalemate with the county over the lease. And as far as we know, it hasn't started back up yet.
No.
Right? So, and I haven't heard that there's been any agreement between the county and the Packers over this lease. So
nor have I.
I would guess, because again, I don't think that it's them tamping down on backlash over season ticket prices and stuff like that. I just don't think that there's that strong a movement going on that end. I think we're probably going to be hearing about this lease thing at least this summer.
Could easily be the case. I got one last thing for you before we close up shop today. I've got current NFC North odds. Have you seen these at all?
I'm going in blind. I assume
beautiful. That's what I'm hoping for. What would you say? 1 through 4. And if you want to give out some numbers too, you're welcome to, but 1 through 4, what are the current NFC North odds?
Us, Detroit, Chicago, Minnesota.
I will say you have one wrong, one swap. Yep.
Is Detroit over us?
Lions, Packers, like Bears, Vikings. And here's the interesting thing. I know. I don't get that either. I remember I made the bold prediction Lions would finish last. I don't know. It was a couple of shows ago or whatever. Lions plus 160. Packers plus 200. Bears plus 340. Vikings plus 600. So not a ton of respect for the NFC North Chicago Bears from a year ago at plus 340. And then Vikings plus 600. Kyler certainly not moving things in a crazy direction upward there. So
I mean, they dealt with so many cap casualty stuff, man. Like, they're gonna have to replace both defensive tackles. Like, that's
and they might still trade Grenard. If they trade Grenard, that's a huge loss. Yeah, we'll see what happens with them. But Lions being number one, plus 160 was a little bit surprising to me. And Bears being number three, plus 340, so far behind Green Bay, the Lions definitely. Like, if you would have told me that this was like a three-way tie, at like, or so everyone was between like plus 180 and plus 220 or something like that, I would have totally believed that. But I was surprised that there was that big of a difference between one, two, and three.
I think that might just be a little bit of like the narrative of like Green Bay is going to be hurt coming into the year.
Could be.
Because I also had not paid that much attention to like the injury timelines and the actual injuries that guys had. And like stuff was flying at the end of the year, folks. We had like 30 transactions that needed to get made in like 10 days on the roster just so that we could put a team together that will be ready to play against the Chicago Bears in the wild card round. I did a deep dive into it last week for APC. It's definitely off the homepage now. So you'd have to look back for it or search it on Google. Andy, I counted, I had 52 posts in 4 days in the beginning of free agency. Nuts.
You're a machine.
Nuts. Yeah. I went to like three comedy shows this weekend just to like fucking like just clean my brain out.
Good idea.
But I looked at the injuries, man, all these guys should be back by the beginning of week one.
Yeah.
And like, not even really the beginning of week. Like most of these guys should be back by the beginning of training camp, if not mini camp, like, so like, Haddon should be back by minicamp. I think it was Tom. It was either Tom or Wyatt. One of those two should be back by minicamp too.
I think it's Wyatt. I think Wyatt's the quicker one.
I don't think that they're going to push it and actually have them participate in minicamp. No, like, probably not. There's not games for a month. I wouldn't expect them to be at minicamp. But if they wanted them ready, they probably could. But I fully expect these guys, like the last one outside of Micah and Jordan Riley, because Jordan Riley might not play this year at all.
Yep.
Outside of Micah, really, the last one should be like Tucker, and Tucker should end up being back on the field like the beginning of August.
Yeah. Mike is the one. So, when I asked Goody about Zach Tom, he said he'd be ready to go for the season. Yeah. So that's very encouraging. Wyatt should be back in time. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I think Tucker will be, I think he'll hit the, you know, be able to be available for week one as well. So yeah, as long as all, knock on wood, goes according to plan, my guess is Jordan Riley gets the, we're going to put you on the PUP list and it's going to be like week 15. And we realize that we can activate you for 3 weeks to practice. So they activate him for like weeks 15, 16 and 17 or 16, 17, 18, whatever to practice. And then they shut him down. That'd be my guess what happens with Riley. But yeah, overall, I think mostly encouraging from a Packers injury standpoint.
Yeah. And I think, again, yeah, just don't expect anything from Riley this year.
No.
But the Packers are going to have to pay for it, but they might as well keep him around. Because, you know, you wave him injured with the settlement, like, he's not going to be healthy until, you know, the same point that you were talking about. So, like, you're not actually saving money. You still have to pay the guy as long as he's hurt, so.
Very much so. Justice, that's all I got for you today. Anything else you wanted to go over?
Not really. I think we hit the big things. It's almost draft time. It's almost draft time, Andy.
It's cram time. It's absolute cram time.
I've been chipping away and I still feel like I'm behind a little bit. I'm going to be on with Tyler Brook probably today when you're hearing this.
Okay.
It probably won't get posted until like midday afternoon-ish. And we're going to talk about interior defensive linemen. We already hit on offensive linemen, off-ball linebackers, corners. I'm still watching more offensive linemen. There's this guy, Jalen Farmer, that I just watched from Kentucky. He's pretty good, and people don't have him in the top 100. I'm like, you guys sure? But, yeah, it's draft time. It's time to think about 20-year-olds instead of 25-year-olds. So.
That's not true. 25-year-olds.
Yeah, true. Hakeem Mezidor is out there hanging out. Yep. And he's Canadian, Andy. He's old and Canadian.
He's a 25-year-old Canadian?
Yes.
I'm out. Is he a Mountie too? I'm all the way out. This is why Green Bay traded away their first-round picks. They're all out on the 25-year-old Mounties. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. Follow him on social media at JUMOSQ and, of course, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.